Hello, and welcome to the Legal Marketing 2.0 podcast. I am your host, Guy Alvarez from Good To Be Social. And today we're going to be talking about a very interesting topic, mastering virtual presenting to develop your own niche. Our guest today is Marsha Redman. Marsha is the CEO of Marsha Redman Communications. And for the last 20 plus years, Marsha has helped lawyers and executives to communicate more effectively and to get more business through presentations, public speaking workshops, business development training, law firm video marketing coaching, media interview training and coaching, pitch coaching. Marsha is also a former Gibson Dunn attorney and a former television news reporter. Welcome to the show, Marsha.
Thanks so much, Guy. I'm very excited to be here.
I am very excited to have you. And, you know, for the first time in a long time, I'm a little bit self-conscious about my presentation since you're such an expert. So hopefully I'll do okay.
You'll be fabulous.
Excellent. So, Marsha, before we get started, tell us a little bit more about your background. Like, how did you make the transition from a lawyer and then to a television reporter? And now, you know, having your own coaching practice. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Sure. So I'm one of those people, I've reinvented myself multiple times. And each time my goal was to spend more hours of each day in my work, loving it. And I figured out that for me, my favorite skill was public speaking. And so I actually set about to find a way to create work in which I could do public speaking as much as possible, while helping an audience or an industry in which I would have credibility. And so that's really how I got here. It took me a couple of steps to figure it out and a number of decades. I've been happily doing this work with lawyers and law firms now for 23 years. And it's fabulous because I know the industry, I know the people, I love working with lawyers, I love working with legal marketers and other professionals.
Fantastic. And to what extent do you feel like your background as a lawyer helps you in the work that you do today?
It's huge. As you know, when you work with lawyers and when you work with law firms, having the credibility of having practiced at a big law firm makes all the difference. Yeah. Lawyers believe you can only help them if you understand them, which it really does make sense. And so I find it gets me over that barrier to entry really quickly. And it gives me instant credibility. Of course, once I open my mouth, then I have to prove that, in fact, I do understand them and that I can give them practical, actionable advice that won't take too long.
Totally agree with that. So let's talk a little bit about virtual presenting. What's the major difference in your mind between virtual presenting for thought leadership and then doing the same thing in person?
I'd say right now, the most important thing to know is that there's a huge opportunity for lawyers right now and law firms who get good at virtual presenting. And there are two reasons for that. The first one is when you're on camera in a virtual scenario, you can leverage what I like to call the talking head video advantage. So if you're properly framed with good lighting and the right camera angle, you get to essentially borrow the presumption of credibility that comes with looking like a talking head expert. Because, you know, for decades, we've all seen experts, heads of state, CEOs, other really smart people on video. So if you can look like that, you will also seem credible and authoritative. And it's not conscious. We don't look at someone and think, oh, they're properly framed, therefore they must know what they're doing. But it's subconscious and it really has an impact on lawyers. The second thing is each person in your audience, when you're doing a virtual presentation for thought leadership, each person on the other end of Zoom, they feel like they're having a one-on-one conversation with you. You're right there on their screen. You're big. They feel connected to you. So if you can be engaging and conversational in that scenario, your audience can feel like they know you. Now, let's compare that to an in-person presentation for thought leadership. You may be 10 or 20 feet away, maybe 50 feet away at a big conference. that's a much more distant communication. And that distance reduces the connection.
Excellent. So clearly, those are all the advantages and the differences between virtual and in person. What would be some disadvantages or some things that you can't do virtually that you can do if you're doing an in-person presentation?
Yes. So the things that are harder to do in a virtual communication is connecting with people one-on-one by milling around. You know, you're not physically present in the same room. And so those things that lawyers are used to doing and legal marketers are used to doing in their own context, like chatting with people where they're getting coffee, having someone join you at lunch, doing those things that we do when we're physically together, we cannot do those with a virtual presentation. We can certainly, you know, connect with somebody for a virtual coffee, try to get together with them when we're in their city or if we're all happen to be back in the office. But we miss out on those in-person opportunities. But the thing that I've noticed is more and more folks are really taking advantage of the chance to do things virtually. They're a lot less likely to get in the car and come to something that's in person.
Makes it easy for sure. So clearly the COVID pandemic had a huge impact on doing things virtually. But now we're seeing a somewhat return to normalcy where more clients and lawyers are going back to the office. Do you think virtual presenting skills are still going to matter for lawyers as we make a shift back?
Absolutely. I am 100% certain that virtual presenting is not going away ever. In fact, what we're seeing is it's being replaced with hybrid presenting. So hybrid pitches, panels, meetings. And let me tell you, Guy, hybrid presenting is much, much harder than virtual. I'd say by a factor of 10.
Yeah. So what are the challenges in a hybrid presentation as opposed to a purely virtual or purely in-person presentation?
Hybrid is a tough one, I'll tell you. So hybrid is when you have audience members that are in the room in person, and you also have other folks that are joining remotely by Zoom or some other platform. And it's a very complex scenario for anyone, and it's new for all of us. So think about it. They have speakers who are in the room and some speakers who are remote. And then you have audience members who are in the room and other audience members who are remote. So it's very challenging. Again, the lawyers and the firms that can learn to really connect in this new hybrid scenario, the goal there would be, you know, be engaging, be energetic, provide practical, targeted thought leadership information. They will have a huge advantage now and going forward. Think of this example. So imagine your firm is doing a hybrid pitch or a hybrid client seminar, and the clients on the other end are feeling marginalized or forgotten because you're focusing on the people who are in the room. That's going to hurt the relationship. And that's really the number one problem we're seeing with hybrid communication is the people at a distance are not getting the same kind of experience. They're not being asked for questions. They're not being included.
Yeah, I recently had exactly that experience. I was asked to do a presentation at the New York City Bar Association, and there was maybe about, you know, 60 to 70 people in the room. And then there was maybe like 10 or 15 that were joining virtually. And so I was sitting in front of a podium. I had the screen to the left, and I was trying to look at the screen, but also look at the people in front of me. And it was really challenging. It was very hard. And then I decided to just primarily focus on the people in front of me and every so often look down on the TV screen. And I would notice that I had missed questions or, you know, or there were more questions. It really became a challenge. What do you recommend in these types of situations?
To your point, Guy, that the number one thing to do is to make sure that you've done things in the room to remind the speakers that those other people are out there, literally out there somewhere. And so some of the things I recommend are get the video boxes of the people at a distance up on a monitor. So many times when we're presenting in person, we'll have just one screen that shows slides or something like that. And so you need to do the tech work to be able to show the slides, but have another screen that shows the faces of the people who are at a distance. So that's the first piece. Remind the speakers there are other people there. The second thing I'd like to do is to have someone who's connected to Zoom, but who can also speak up in the room and basically be the voice of the distant attendees. So take the questions in chat, take those questions and ask them by voice on behalf of the distant audience. That can help. And just remind yourself to ask specifically for the audience at a distance to bring questions. It's just so easy to forget that folks are out there. A final thing I recommend, if you're able to do it, is to use technology. So to use something as similar to polling questions that you would see in a webinar. There's one called Poll Everywhere. There's another one called Mentimeter. And so you tee up those questions in the software. It shows up like a slide on the screen, but everyone votes in the same way. They use their mobile phone. And so in that case, you're letting the distant audience and the audience that's in person have the same experience. And as you know, Guy, polling questions are a great way to warm up an audience and also to guide the speakers to give just the right information. And the third benefit is that they send a strong message to all of the audience members that the speakers, and in many cases, the law firm behind the speakers, really care about what the clients and prospective clients want to know. And so they really want to engage with them and hear from them.
Great, great advice. I wish I would have heard that before, but I could see how all of those things could be a huge help. Let's talk about some of the mistakes you've seen lawyers make when they're presenting virtually. What are some of the biggest mistakes that come to your mind?
Yes, hands down, they do not make eye contact. And I realize it's hard. You know, I went to broadcast television school as an undergrad, and we spent months learning how to make eye contact with a giant camera as though we were, you know, looking at a single real person. So I get that it's hard, but we have to learn how to do it. The clients, prospective clients, and other audience members on the other end of Zoom will only feel like you're confident and authoritative and comfortable if they feel like you're looking at them. So you have to look at the actual camera, especially in the beginning. And so my advice there is imagine that you're talking to one friendly person and they're just on the other side of that camera. You know, if you look away at another screen or you're constantly looking down at your slides, it seems either unprofessional or simply that you're not confident. And none of those are messages we want to send as lawyers and other professionals.
Totally agree with you. What other mistakes have you seen? Any other egregious mistakes?
Sure. And the other one is just being boring. It's true. And there are two reasons for it. The first one is low energy. So on Zoom and other virtual platforms, we don't feel comfortable. We've been on Zoom for years. And so the thing to know is that the way you communicate energy over a virtual platform is through your voice, right? It's not so much your body. You know, when you're standing in front of a room at the top of a stage with 100 people, a lot of the energy that you communicate is with your body, your posture, your gestures, all of that. On Zoom, you have your voice. And so whatever works on the phone to be engaging, to be warm, to be conversational, that's what works virtually. And so lawyers have to find a way within their own personalities. We don't want to try to be someone that we're not and not feel comfortable, but they need to find a way to get that energy through the voice, to connect, to keep attention, and just to come across as someone that people want to work with. If you're boring over Zoom, why would people want to hire you?
Totally agree. I consider myself to be a pretty good public speaker, and I had a lot of experience speaking publicly at conferences and trade shows and the like. But getting used to and mastering the art of virtual communications it definitely takes some practice and some time to really get it to where you want it to be, right?
Oh, absolutely. The good news is you have lots of chance to practice because so many things that we're doing are virtual. And so use your voice, you know, pick a week, say this week I'm focusing on my voice. And you can always record just your side of the Zoom conversation or the Zoom presentation on your end, record it, and then listen to it. The other thing I often do with lawyers as we work on the other giant bucket, which is communication content, what are you actually saying and how are you saying it to be interesting and engaging. I recommend the same thing is to record it. There's several apps you can use that record your voice and then they transcribe what you said. So then you can look at what you said and figure out what are your bad verbal tics? Are you being concise? Are you being disorganized? Those kinds of things.
Yeah, I find that to be very valuable. We actually just started using one of those apps that you mentioned, and it's recording all of our team, and it's a virtual note taker, if you will. But one of the things it also does is it lets you know how many of those ums and ahs and you knows, and it'll let you know who from your team is doing that a lot so that you can work with them on virtual presentations. So I think, you know, more and more tools are available now that can help with this for sure.
Absolutely. And it's a beautiful thing. It saves so much time. And also from a content creation perspective, for decades, lawyers like to talk. They used to like to dictate. And so you can talk out your next content, your article or client alert while you're walking around and have your phone record it and then transcribe it. And then maybe a junior associate can, you know, edit it and work on it a bit, or you can go back later and edit it. Saves tons of time.
Absolutely. We're both former lawyers, and they don't teach you communication skills in law school. And not that many firms actually train their lawyers on communication skills. You've been working with lawyers now over 20 years on their communication skills. What would you say is one of the most important things you teach many lawyers that they still need to learn?
That's easy. Audience. Lawyers often miss their audience. They may not always know who is in the audience, and they certainly may not give attention to how can I start my communication to get the attention of my audience, and how much detail should I include based on who my audience is. Funny story, I started this business 23 years ago when I was working as a TV reporter the second time, because I noticed that really smart people like lawyers, doctors, scientists, technologists had the hardest time giving a decent interview on a consumer or an investigative story. And I finally figured out it was because they didn't get who their audience is. Those really smart people didn't know they needed to translate what they knew to make it understandable for, you know, a local TV audience. And honestly, many of them were boring because they didn't start with what was most important for the average TV viewer. And so with lawyers, I really help them to focus and ask the question, you know, what will have impact on my audience about this topic? Let me start with that. You know, this matters to you because is a great way to start any communication as a lawyer.
That is such great advice. And it goes beyond verbal communications, right? I frequently work with lawyers to try to get them to understand how to write for their audience. And, you know, it's the same advice that you're giving applies to written communications, verbal communications, audio communications, anything, right? It's really understanding who your audience is and what they really care about.
Exactly. And, you know, it's also, you know, step number one in not being boring is helping your audience understand the impact of that legal issue on their business. And when you start that way, you get their attention. You also make a strong impression that you're the kind of lawyer they want to work with, because everything you say and the way you frame all the advice you give is honed right in on their specific business situation, right? Clients don't want to know about the law. They want to know, in as few words as possible, how you can help them make their business work better.
I love it. Such great advice. So, Marsha, I know that you have a thought leadership map for lawyers that you want to make available to our audience. Tell us a little bit about what that is and how it might be useful to them.
Certainly. So the thought leadership map is a 7-step process that walks lawyers or legal marketers through the map toward how can I hone in on the right audience right now? How can I pick a right topic that will grab their attention? How can I niche down right now when things are so busy to get people's attention, and then get that thought leadership in front of them in a way that, you know, a busy lawyer is willing to do? Walk through that whole process. If you'd like to take a look at the thought leadership map, You can go to thoughtleadershipmap.com. So pretty simple, thoughtleadershipmap.com. Take a look at those, and then I'll follow up in several weeks. I'm putting together a short couple of videos that walk through some of the best practices under each of the 7 steps.
Fantastic. And we'll add that URL to the show notes. So if any of our listeners didn't catch that, you'll be able to click through that as well. All right, Marcia. Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time today, although, you know, I could certainly listen to you for a while, and maybe we'll have you back on the show sometime in the future. But before I let you go, what would be one piece of advice you would give to either a marketing professional or a lawyer that is trying to improve their verbal communication skills and presentation skills?
Practice. I would say look for opportunities to practice. And in many cases, it's more comfortable to practice outside of your professional world. So find ways out in the world where you can practice. And realize, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be a live communication. You could record something that's helpful. An app I love is Loom, L-O-O-M. You can walk people through, here's how to do this, here's how to do that, here's what I'd like for you to do. And that's a way to practice your communication skills in a very low risk way, but it's also helping you get some work done.
Fantastic. All right. Well, Marcia, thank you so much for being on the show today. It's been a pleasure to have you.
Thank you. This has been really fun.
Great. And for our listeners, if you enjoyed today's episode, please go to goodtobesocial.com/podcast. There you can subscribe to the show so you don't miss any future episodes. You can also listen to some of our great past episodes. Thank you again, Marcia, for your time, and to our audience, thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.